A flute concerto by Wilhelm Friedemann Bach with Christian Gertner and the Vienna Academy. I'm Lynn Warfel.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and thank you for tuning in during this summer season to our beautiful classical programming. We hope you're enjoying some of the other programs that you might have an opportunity to listen to here on 89.3 FM or on the web at WHFR.FM. Would you like to become a member of our loyal listener mailing list? Well, we offer a free bi-monthly publication that gives you insight on happenings that WHFR might be involved in, new specialty programs, and much, much more. Simply give me a call, Susan McGraw, WHFR General Manager, 313-845-9842. That's 313-845-9842. Leave your full name, address, and telephone number, and we will put you on our free WHFR loyal listener mailing list so you won't miss a thing. Enjoy your summer with WHFR Radio, the station that's making waves.
Good morning, this is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And my special guest this month is Dr. William Carl. He is a wellness doctor and a holistic chiropractor. Doctor, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great this morning. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
Well, thank you for being here. And also, quickly, I want to thank you for being part of the Festival of Enlightenment. That was our holistic fair that we had in May. Thank you for doing that. We appreciate it.
It was a great show. I enjoyed being there and being able to talk and see all the people come by and learn new things.
Right. Well, you also spoke, so we appreciate that, too. We did have a great number of speakers, and they all did very well, I thought. So, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Over the years, I found one of the things that I enjoy doing next to taking care of people is going out and talking to people so I can share the knowledge that I've come across over the years and the great people I've met over time.
Mm-hmm. That's very important, right?
Oh, it's extremely important because if you don't share your knowledge, then it just sits with a few people. But if you go out and it spreads, it'll spread from one person to another, and then you can affect a great number more people and help a great number more people.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us, what is a wellness doctor?
Well, a wellness doctor is someone who specializes in not only getting people well, but keeping people well. As a wellness doctor, we take a look at what a person needs to do and stay normal and healthy. And that includes everything from exercise, diet, mental attitude, how you live your life.
Mm-hmm. So you're trying to improve other people's lives? Is that what your mission is?
Now, it's to improve other people's lives and to improve the world around us. We find that when people in the world are happy and healthy, then the world tends to be a better place. People that cause problems in the world are usually those people that are not happy, not healthy, and as a result of that, they take out their frustrations and aggravations in other ways that are detrimental to the people around them.
Mm-hmm. I think your philosophy is, though, not only has it do with external, but also internal as well, right? I mean, you want to get people to exercise, I guess, improve their posture, things like that, but you also want to improve what they put in their body as well, correct?
What you put in your body is extremely important. We live in a world today, especially in this country, where our food has been damaged, it's been changed. The things that we used to eat are no longer hardly even available. You have to go way out of your way to find them. When you do, people tend to believe in the beginning that if you buy things like organic foods, that you're spending way more money than you should because they're comparing it to the apparent cost of the foods they're buying in the conventional sense, which is unfortunately a misnomer because you're not looking at the long-term effect of what you're putting in your body and the cost that it's going to have to you over time.
Mm-hmm.
if you put in something good in your body is going to continue to regenerate itself as it's designed to over the many years that it's been designed to run. Bodies have been estimated genetically to be able to repair themselves for well over 100 years. Some people as much as 170 years have estimated that. So the genes are there, the plan is there, but the problem is the product to replace it with isn't there. In the past, people lived a much longer and better life, although people in the past, people assumed that people in the past didn't live longer because they looked at average life expectancies. And when you look at an average life expectancy, what you're looking at is the mortality between from the time you're born till the time that you pass on. In much earlier days, we had much more infant mortality, which brought down the average number of years a person lived. But we still had a good number of people who lived to ripe old ages, but they did it in a very healthy way. Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate in that our genes, the genes that we have today, are basically from a group of people from about 40,000 years ago, a group of hunter-gatherer people. And that group of people was the healthiest group that was ever on this planet, which is why we have their genes, of course, because the ones that weren't didn't make it, so they didn't pass anything on.
Unfortunately, right?
Yeah. So what they did, what we find is the best way of staying healthy is to emulate the basic way that the group of people lived so that we can then use that as an example. And as a hunter-gatherer, they would eat basically things along the lines of fresh fruits and vegetables, mostly uncooked, eggs, meat, and fish. Mm-hmm. And they had the best bone structure. They had the least disease processes. They had good hearts. They had all the right things going for them that allowed them to live like that in an environment 40,000 years ago that was probably a little more hostile than it is in certain ways to today. And in other ways, our environment is much more hostile too.
Right. Well, not only that, but they walked around a lot too, so they got a lot of exercise as well.
Exactly. And exercise is extremely important. And that's another part of, as a wellness practice, one of the things I do is that I insist that all my patients learn an exercise program that we teach them in the office as part of their care that they do every single day. Because if you don't exercise, you can't have your body continue to rebuild in a natural way. You can't heal from damage that's done to the body, because one of the big things that keeps a body from holding together and healing once it does go through physical damage or other types of damage is ligament. And ligament doesn't have a great blood supply to it, and for reasons that we tend to believe is a result of another, a survival mechanism. The ligaments are the things that hold our bones together within a certain range of movement. If those ligaments were easily affected by something that went through the body in a form of what we would call a systemic problem or going through the systems of the body, then if the ligaments all fell apart, we'd be lying in a pile of bones on the floor. That could be a problem. It's much harder for me to put people back together in that situation.
Yeah, that's right. Impossible, I would say, but you never know. I'm sure you do great work, but I don't know if you can do that.
I don't want to try that yet.
Okay. That's a few years down the road, right? Now, do you yourself work out? Do you practice that? I mean, you exercise every day?
Every morning I get up, I go through a series of exercises. I teach both a basic and an advanced set of exercises. The basic ones are a group that I put together that, again, helps enhance the blood circulation around the core of the body, around the spine, so that the ligament structures around the spine then get an increase in the amount of blood flow to them. Blood is very important. That's why you can have bone. If you break a bone will heal in about 6 to 8 weeks on the average, and it's because it has a fantastic blood supply to it. It's got food. It's got oxygen coming into it. It has enzymes coming in to break down the damaged structures and carry them off, and the body gets rid of it. And as the building materials are brought in, the bone repairs. And those are big, strong structures. And then when you get to the other end of things, the other extreme, again, is things like cartilage and ligament, which doesn't have a direct blood supply to it. But with that, the healing time in there takes much longer. If you look at a textbook will tell you those things will take about 90 days to heal. But in my close to 30 years of practice, I've never seen that happen, so I figure you must have to put those structures in a textbook for it to happen, mm-hmm. and then take them out and use them later. But in reality, it usually takes somewhere between 1 to 3 years of repair time for those things to take place, mm-hmm. and that's why it does take time. The other thing we see is because of the difference in nutrition between now and, say, 120 years ago, that people then, according to the doctors in the healing arts and the chiropractic profession in particular that I've talked to that have worked back a long, good number of years ago, that they said they would get somebody in and under almost any circumstance that they had, under the most horrible conditions that they were torn up in, that they could repair them in about 3 months. Today, we never see that anymore. And that's too bad, but a great deal of that, I believe, is due to the nutrition being so drastically different today than it was then, as well as you mentioned, the exercise. People don't exercise. They don't get the physical activity they used to. They're under a lot of mental stress. Mental stress is just as powerful a force as any physical stress. I tell the patients when they come in, mental, emotional, and chemical stressors are just as powerful as somebody beating you with a 2x4. The problem with them is they don't leave marks. And if they did, then people would understand why they felt the way they do.
Right.
So,
well, I saw in one article you wrote that you said stress is neither good nor bad. It just is, correct?
That is correct. And that's, I like that so much because stress is a misknown thing these days. Stress is a situation where everybody goes, oh, I have stress. What am I going to do? Stress, I'd like not to have any stress. And that's nonsense because stress is also the thing that makes us strong. My favorite analogy with stress is a sailboat. If anybody's ever been in a sailboat, you're the boat, stress is the wind. If you have enough stress, your boat goes along and you have a great time. That's when you have challenges in life and you overcome a challenge. What better time do you feel than when you've overcome the challenge in life? Yet, if you have no stress, like being in the sailboat would be no wind, and you'd be dead calm in the water. You're going nowhere. Those are the people who you would look at and think, gee, they shouldn't have any health conditions. Why do they have this? You know, they have no stressors in their life. Well, it's because they have no game in their life. If you have no game in your life, life's not fun. You don't want to play. So what do? You create a game. And the game they create is usually, I'm going to be sick and let's see if I can get better. But what happens when the game, if they win the game, then the game's over. So they create a game where they don't get better. And those are the people that are the toughest people to deal with. The toughest people to get back into a great line of health are the ones who don't have natural stressors. And then what you have to do with them is you have to go and teach them about going out and doing things to help other people, to go and have, you know, things that they want to do where they can go out and be challenged in life again. You know, and this is the person who also has had some great feat they've accomplished early on in their life. They do that, and then once they do that, what's the next hurdle for them when they've done something fantastic? Now they have to do something even more fantastic, otherwise they fall and they collapse. So that's a big problem for them.
Mm-hmm. And just real briefly, I want to remind everybody that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and my special guest this month is Dr. William Carl. He is a wellness doctor and a holistic chiropractor. Now, you said that you also give exercises to your patients. What if they are physically unable to do those exercises? What do you do to work around that?
Well, what we have to do is take a look at them and see what they are able to do, and then modify the situation to get them to be able to function as best they can or exercise the best they can with whatever limitations they have. As I say, in the basic exercises that I teach people, those are things where they're very nice, gentle exercises. You don't have to take a shower when you're done. You don't have to go wear a workout suit to do them. They're nice, gentle stretching exercises that mobilize all the tissues, especially around the spine, and to be able to get a person to move, especially in the head and the neck. Somebody who has limitations, say, with their legs, where they have bad knees, they can still do exercises with the neck. One of the things that we found over time and has been universally basically known is that the more movement, more normal movement you have with your head and your neck, the healthier a person tends to be. And that makes sense if you stop to think about it, because what's the controller for the body? It's the brain. Where does the brain sit? Usually between your ears.
Yeah, usually.
Mm-hmm. So the better movement we have with the neck, the healthier the person is. Mm-hmm. So that's incorporated into all the basic exercises. Mm-hmm. So we go through those. And once a person gets up to a certain number of these exercises, then they qualify to come to the advanced classes. The advanced classes are not exercises that I put together, but rather ones that I found from the Tibetan monks up in the Himalayas. They know a whole lot about life and have had plenty of time up there to figure out about how energy in the body works. And these exercises, they design based on what are called chakras. Chakras, as we know today, are energy fields that rotate around the body. This is the things that have been known for thousands and thousands of years in the past. People have been smart for a really long time. People didn't just get smart in the last few years since, you know, computers came around. And there's a lot of people who tend to believe that.
Yes, well, there's a lot of things that people have gotten a lot dumber in some ways. We won't go into that. But, I mean, it all changes. It ebbs and flows throughout time.
It does. And it's absolutely true that in some places people have gotten dumber. If you look at a test for passing eighth grade from 100 years ago, people that are graduating from college today would have a hard time passing that test. I had the opportunity to look at one of those just recently, and I was amazed at what a person knew. Mm-hmm. But I shouldn't have been, because they got the world to where we are today.
Right, right. Now, when a patient comes to you, what do you first do with a patient? I mean, if they're complaining about a certain thing, do you try to work on it internally or externally? Is it something that's determined as you talk to the patient? How does that work?
When a new person comes in to see me, what I do is I sit down and I do an interview with them, find out what their problems are, what their main concerns are, and what things have been holding them back in life from being able to do the things they need to do. One of the things that I feel is different and important about my practice from a lot of other healthcare practices is that rather than telling a person, you have to stop doing this and you have to stop doing that and you know you're older now and you shouldn't do those things, I don't like those ideas whatsoever. I believe a person should be, as we talk about in chiropractic philosophy, like a candle that burns brightly from beginning to end, flickers a little bit once or twice, and then goes out. A person shouldn't be like an old car that has parts falling off of it, you know, and your muffler goes, your fenders go, and next thing you know, finally the engine dies. That's not what a body is meant to do. So when a new person comes in, I take a look at them and find out what's been going on in their life and what restrictions they found that have developed over time, and what was it they used to be able to do that they can't do now that they would like to go back and do again. Then we determine the best course of care, the best program for trying to get them back on that track. One of the biggest things that we find in life goes back again to stressors, which the main organs in our body that handle stress are the adrenal glands. The adrenal glands are two small organs that sit above the kidneys on either side. Your kidneys are right above your hips in the back. If you put your hands over your hip bone in the back, your hands are over your kidneys. You go on top of that, there you'll find the adrenal glands. Most important organ in the body, more than likely, because they are the controlling, they control and coordinate all the other functions of the other organs in the body other than those things that take place in the brain. And from the brain speaks to the adrenals through hormones like pregnenolone, and also through the nervous system to tell them what needs to be done, and then they start initiating situations throughout the body. So if your adrenal glands are not working, your thyroid, your heart, your kidneys, your stomach, all these other organs are going to be in trouble. So you have to have the adrenal glands work first. The adrenal glands are also important whenever we do testing. We do a type of testing in the office called muscle response testing. Muscle response testing is very, very accurate if you know how to do it. But in order to do it accurately, you have to have functional adrenal glands. So the majority of people I see come in the office have burned out adrenal glands, and that's one of the main things that cause them to malfunction. I see people that have gone to many other healthcare practitioners much of the time, people who I have a great deal of respect for, that when they come in still at a failed case, oftentimes the thing that was missed was checking out those adrenal glands and then getting them to function. You got to feed them, you got to take care of them in order to make them go. It's just like if you had people working for you and you wanted them to go out and do a lot of hard work for you and you never let them eat, they wouldn't work very hard, not for long.
Mm-hmm. So a good dose of caffeine is not going to help the adrenal glands too much? I know that's what I usually rely on is
caffeine is the other vitamin C, I've heard.
Yes, well, that's the way I look at it, you know. Start it with every morning. Yeah, it's the way to go.
Yeah.
Now, how do you determine whether they're working or not, and what do you do to get them to function properly?
Well, the adrenal glands are so important that we have several tests to test to see whether they function or not. There's one of the easiest tests to do is what's called an adrenal stretch test, and that's where you take a strong muscle like an arm or a leg, hold it out, put some pressure on it, put some downward pressure on it, and see whether or not they can, first off, hold that limb up. And if they can, that's a good start. Then what you do next is you pull on it and give it a little sharp snap, and that's a stress to the body. If the adrenal glands are working correctly, then that arm or leg will stay strong and stay in place. If the adrenal glands are questionable, that strength that they had will no longer be there and the arm will drop. And that's an easy place to start, and it's a very cost-efficient test. The next thing we do is called a pupillary response test. And with that, what we do is we look into a person's eye with a pen light, and the eye should dilate under normal circumstances. If your adrenal glands are not working, the eye will dilate, and then it'll bounce back open, and then down, and bounce back open again. That's another indication of poor adrenal glands. One of the other tests that we do with that is a test where we have a person lay down, we take their blood pressure, and then we have them stand up and we take their blood pressure again right away. Your blood pressure in a normal person is going to rise 5 to 10 points. If it doesn't, that means your adrenal glands are not sending information to your arteries, which have muscles in them. The arteries are supposed to contract so that blood continues to flow to your brain. One of the big things for a person, anybody who's listening who hears this, and they wonder whether or not they are having problems. If you ever notice when you get up from sitting or standing and feel dizzy, that's your adrenal glands not working, and that's very, very important. And if that's the case, you need to get those things checked, and you need to get them checked right away, because you can also have problems with heart resulting from that test. The doctor who developed that test actually spoke to one of my instructors that I learned these things from. And he had talked about that when this is done, he's had people that he's saved from having cardiac arrests by finding this problem with them, getting them in under care quickly, and then having the problem handled.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do to get it jump-started, the adrenal glands, that is?
Okay. One of the big things we do with the adrenal glands is that we have supplements that we use. Again, most of the problem that we have in health today is due to lack of good nutrition. So we have to feed the adrenal glands real food, and so you use a whole food supplement. There's one that we use that we are especially fond of that was developed by Dr. John Brimhall from Mesa, Arizona, who also developed a program, the certification program that I've passed through as a wellness doctor. And he and his staff people develop nutrition for specific problems. He has, this particular one is called DSF. Mm-hmm. It stands for de-stressing formula, which is important because stress, as I mentioned earlier, is a good thing when it's the proper amount of stress. As in my analogy before, we had the stress of the sailboat pushing it along, it was a good thing. The stress of no wind is a bad thing. The stress of too much wind capsizing your boat is a very bad thing. Okay, so what we find so many people today have had too much wind and blowing them over. And as a result of that, the adrenal glands get burned out, blown out, and don't want to work hardly at all anymore, barely keeping them alive. The main work on this was done by a medical doctor, a researcher by the name of Hans Selye. He wrote 3 volumes of books on stress and the effects of it. and that the four stages of stress. And the first stage of stress being when you first have a stress and you deal with it and your body does fine, bounces back. When you go under stress, your body is going to quit producing the normal hormones that the adrenals make and then produce stress-related hormones, which we can talk about now or talk about a little bit in.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Very good. With this, when a body, as I say, when a body goes under stress, the normal things that are happen will be that you're going to stop producing the normal hormones. Normal hormones are about 30 in number, and they include things like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and other hormones that keep our body running normally and correctly. These hormones you might think of as the sexually related hormones and part of the ones that I named, and they are, but for people, they supplement into the hormones that are produced from other of the sexual organs of the body. Like for ladies, about 25 to 30% of their estrogen and progesterone is produced by the adrenal glands premenopausally. Postmenopausally, it produces the majority. For men and women as well, both need testosterone. We find that when women don't produce enough testosterone, they lose interest in us guys. So that's a problem.
Yeah, that's not good. Definitely not good.
So we like that to be functional as well. So whenever, again, we hit a stress, things happen. Hormones shift. Those hormones drop down, and we have other hormones that pick up. We have the stress hormones, those being things like adrenaline, cortisol, and ACTH. Now, those are some of the stress-related hormones. They go up to help us handle a situation known as fight or flight. Fight or flight being that thing where we take a look at the tiger and go, how big's the tiger? Can we beat him up, or should we be running right now? We size up the situation, whatever it happens to be in life, whenever we're stressed, and decide what we're going to do with it. If our hormones are working well, then we can do that. If they aren't working well, we sort of sit there and then we become lunch for the tiger that way. If they are working, then again, we go and handle that. And our body is such an amazing, incredible thing. It was designed so that we could have a life-threatening experience 3 times a day and we would be in fantastic health. So don't think that you can never have a stress in life, that you can never have an incident take place that's going to be something that, you know, will raise your blood pressure a bit. No, that's a good thing. But we're designed for about 3 times a day. What happens in the world we live in, we don't get 3 times a day. We get about 30 times a day. And at 30 times a day, now what happens is these levels of these stress hormones rise and they stay up in a very high plane. And the normal hormones we have are down where they're not supposed to be for extended periods of time. We also know that whenever we're stressed, other things happen in the body. It shuts off our digestive system, because if you're going to face the tiger, you don't need to digest the hamburger that you had at lunch, you know, because if you don't get it going and with all the energy moving in the right direction, just like in the old Star Trek movies where they go into red alert and they transfer all the energy from non-essential systems to, you know, weapons and defense, our bodies are like that. And so we're not going to digest our food at that point in time. We're going to handle things. We're also going to shut off our immune system, because we don't fight a bacteria when we have to face the tiger. The bacteria might get us next week, but the tiger's right now. Mm-hmm. So that shuts down. And the other thing that shuts down is cellular repair. If you have a scratch or a cut, your body's not going to put a lot of energy into healing it when you can have large teeth marks in you next. So the body shuts the energy down from these things, runs it up so that we can put it in where we need it. And that's a fantastic system. We run into strange problems with that these days, though, because one of the things, what do they have us fearing these days? They have us fearing things like bacterias and swine and bird flu,
yes.
You know, which is a whole discussion in itself as to the validity of such things. But in those things, again, now you're looking at an enemy that's microscopic. So how is our body going to respond to that when we're used to responding to enemies that are big, you know, macroscopic, that we then have methods of dealing with. So our body has to do a little adaption to this new world we live in with the new type of threats we have.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that going on. But again, fight or flight as opposed to normal function, we want to make sure that we don't stay in fight or flight, because when we do, this is when we see people start to go into some very bad health conditions. And one of those health conditions includes people where they gain weight that they can't lose. So that happens as a result of being under constant stress that the body looks at as constantly having to fight or flee away.
Mm-hmm. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Dr. William Carl. He's a wellness doctor and a holistic chiropractor. Now, when you say the fight or flight, that's something that's with us when we're born, right? I mean, that's something that passed down from generation to generation.
Well, that's a natural part of the hardwiring in our body, is to have this protective mechanism within us. And this is one of the things that's interesting, too, that over time, some of those things that may be semi-hardwired into our body, we have to change in how we deal with the world around us. In a world in which we are not as, perhaps, aware of the things around us as we are today, when we weren't using as much of, say, our frontal gray matter here, and more in the lines of just reacting to things, our body was set up to be protected by reactions to things, by sort of a knee-jerk response. Today, we do better if rather than doing that, rather than just reacting to something, we can see it, analyze it, and then respond in a correct way. That way, we have a much better chance of doing well with that.
Mm-hmm. And you said in some situations, people feel the need to react, to do something. Now, what if they just say, I can't deal with it, I give up? What do you tell that type of person that can't deal with the stress? I guess what I'm saying is the stress does build up so much after a time that how do they diffuse that?
Well, again, with that, that's a question that I run into. That's a problem I do run into with people, because at times people do feel so worn down they want to quit. They want to roll over and die. Well, rolling over and dying is never a good answer.
Yeah,
because
usually not.
In my world, within my personal philosophies, I feel that if you roll over and die, you're going to come back and have to do it again until you get it right.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well get it right this time instead of having to come back and do it over and over again. With that, the part of it is how one looks at life. Life, once you get too serious about life, then you're going to be in trouble. Life is a game. You got to play the game, and you got to have a playful attitude with life. Seriousness will definitely bring about your demise. And some people always say, oh, you've got to be serious, you got to be this, you got to be that, as many of us were taught in school. And you might notice the people that did well in school, the people that have done well in life, are not those people that are always running around serious. Those are the ones running around with ulcers.
Mm-hmm.
The people that have the playful attitude, make life a game that you can win, not a game that you can't win. As I talked about in the people that would have no great stressors of their own, those people are never going to win that game. They're going to lose until they get the idea they got to come out of that. So anybody with any kind of situation going on, no matter how tough it is, your attitude is extremely important, because your attitude is going to determine your outcome.
Right. That's probably 99% of it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And with that, part of that comes down again to how your body is responding to things, and that's also by the things you put into your body. It's a big circle again. If you feed your body junk, if you stop and you think about the times you've gone to a birthday party and you're hungry and you ate big chunk of sugary cake, how do you feel? You feel horrid. How do you react to other people around you? You treat them bad. How do they treat you? Well, if you've treated them bad, there's good odds they're going to treat you in like. You treat somebody nice, they're going to, in like, probably treat you much nicer and much better. When you eat food that's good for you, you can think clearer. When you get toxins out of your body, toxins are one of the six phases of interference we talk about in wellness. and the wellness certification I have, there's six things that cause health concerns with almost every individual, that if you clear those up, you clear up almost all the health problems. So getting the toxins out of a person by eating, by not putting them in there in the first place, and then eating correctly, you feel great when you eat right. And it's one of the things that kills me when I read certain consumer magazines that I won't mention the name of, and they do taste tests between organic foods and non-organic foods and say, oh, our expert panel says they all taste alike. And it used to drive me crazy when I'd read that until I finally figured out what was going on. And at first, you know, I'd go for the conspiracy theory of, oh, they're just trying to, you know, it's big business and that. It's not so much that. It's a matter more so that people, when they eat conventional food, your taste buds are in a coma. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell the difference in the taste. I remember when people first start educating me on these things and getting me to start to eat the right foods and the right things. As a result of that, in the beginning, I thought it was horrible. You know, oh, look at the high cost of things. But then once my taste buds came back to life and my body started coming back to life, I found that when I ate the bad stuff, I felt bad. And I went, huh, well, that cost me something there. I don't feel good. You know, this is one of the hidden costs in the food. And then you can't think it straight. That's a hidden cost in the food. And in some of the processes we go through where we have people learn how to be able to learn better, be able to take in information at a high rate of speed, as I have to do with some of the organizations I belong to when I go out and I do classes, I'll have to, in anywhere from 3 days to a week, learn the same amount of information as somebody would learn in a normal semester of college.
Mm-hmm. So you got to cram, right?
Well, it's cramming, but it's also looking at things different. You look at things different because if you get the concept of what's going on rather than try to just memorize a group of facts, you know, a tape recorder can memorize facts, but it can't put them together and know how to use them. It can't get new information out of it. But a person can. A person's an incredible thing. And a person, your brain puts out over 3 trillion signals a second to run your body. It's more than any powerful computer there is out there can do. You know, so when you treat your body right, doing the right things with it, you can take in information like that and then manipulate the information to figure out new things from it.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think people just take their bodies for granted until there is a problem. Then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, what's happening?
You are exactly right about that. I have so many people. When I go out and I do talks at a lot of places, that's part of the foundation of wellness professionals. We go out and talk to groups all over the place and all over the country that we've been to. One of the things people will say is, well, if something breaks, I'll just go get it fixed. My early time when I started out in the late 60s, early 70s, I worked down at Ford Hospital in Detroit. And I worked in the labs. I worked in the emergency room. I did research down there and got the idea for what people were looking at from that viewpoint. At that time, I thought about going the medical route with things. I changed my mind from that after being there because the things I saw didn't make sense to me in getting a person back into health, nor in how a person should be cared for in my mind. I was the young whippersnapper then who didn't understand as much as I do now, and I have a great deal more respect for all the people I was around then than I did then, but I still have the basic philosophies that run me, that push me to do the things I do today, which is constant learning. But the point is that we need to take good care of these bodies because you only get one this time around. The parts you have on it, you don't get replacement parts that are going to simply work. As I say, part of my early work had to do with organ transplant rejection. At that time, nobody knew why. The research I did looked into the why, and we found out many of the whys for it and the long-term effects of, say, if somebody did have to have a part replaced. You were never 100% after that. You're always on rejection medication because it's not your part. Right. And your body is so darn smart. It has a code. It has a combination for every single cell in your body to know that that's part of you. And if it's not part of you, it knows that it wants to get rid of it because then it's an invader. So the way things are done, if people do get to the point of having to replace body parts, it's going to have to be way different than they're doing today in order for it truly to be successful.
Now, do you eat totally organic, all natural type food? You don't eat any junk food whatsoever?
Now, I could say yes, but I'd be lying to you.
Okay. I just wanted to know, you know, it's important to me, I guess, because I just want to know if you eat the Coney Islands or the White Castle hamburgers or anything like that.
You crossed a line there at
White Castle. Oh, okay. Really? That's not good, huh?
I had a bad experience for them back many years ago when I did some study down at Wayne State. But my philosophy is 80-20. I tell my patients when they come in and they say, I want to be healthy, I want to do all these things, and they're gung-ho on it, I actually have to put the brakes on them a little bit and say, look, what you're doing here is you're not going to a destination, you're on a journey. And the journey is that you're slowly going to change from where you are to a better place where you can be. And if you try to do it all at once, you'll make yourself crazy and everyone around you, and someone will not want you, many people will not want you around them, including the people who already are eating this way. Mm-hmm. It's in a way like the person who is the smoker who then quits smoking and then talks to people about not smoking. They're the ones who are the most vehement about, you know, they're the ones that get out there and tell everybody, oh, you can't do this, and are real hardcore on them. My rule is 80-20. If you do things right 80% of the time, 20% of the time you can mess around and do other things. There are times I'll have a Coney Island. There are times I'll have most any of these things. Although the interesting thing is in the journey that you're on, and we're all on a journey, so we're all at different points in how we're doing with that, that you find you make different choices. Today, as I go and I make choices when I'm in my 20%, is different choices than I would have made a year ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago. My choices now are things that I know that make me feel better and are happier, are things that are actually much more healthy. Because as we go along, those things that looked like they were so good to us before actually begin to taste bad. I at one point, I was a person who drank a 2 liter of Coke a day. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the bottles piling up and I said to myself, that's not good. Yeah. And so I finally hit a point where I put myself on a program for a month that was a very stringent program that I never recommend my patients, but I always experiment on myself first before I tell anybody else to do anything. And in the process, one of the things I totally eliminated was soda pops. And at the end of the program, I went back to it and I said, well, I'm going to give myself a reward because I remember how good that tasted to me before. And I went back and I had a glass, or I had a little cup of Coke, and it tasted horrible to me. It wouldn't pass my lips, much less anywhere else. And I said, how could I do that? How could I do that before? But when I was there, when I was in the middle of it, it was just the best thing. I'd wake up in the morning to have it, you know, and as many of the people probably listening do now. That, other things, Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew is great for killing ants, but it's not great to drink. You know, it's...
It's good if you want the caffeine. I mean, that's usually why most people drink all these energy drinks now. I think that's kind of a misnomer. It's not really an energy drink. It's basically the caffeine that is making you all excited.
Yeah. It's interesting. My son recently graduated from Michigan State with a degree in nutritional sciences before he goes on to become a wellness doctor as well. Mm-hmm. And in there, one of his... research projects he did had to do with energy drinks and the effects on people. And these particular energy drinks were the ones that people seem to think, take an energy drink that has alcohol in it. So that's sort of like, you know, tying yourself between two horses and tell them, giddy up, go, trying to pull yourself hard both directions.
Right.
A lot of devastating things happen to a body when you do that. Even he came up with things, you know, he had to do this as part of the experiment because it was his experiment. He came up with things like he developed psoriasis for a while that we had to get rid of. He developed knee pain that he had never had before where discs in his low back were blowing out. And he is one big, strong character. You know, he is not somebody who would easily think would be harmed by things. And within a short period of time, these things were doing bad, bad things to his body. So you take an average person who hasn't had the upbringing he's had, that's had the clean life he's had, and put them on this. The scary thing for them is they don't know that they're being devastated. They don't know their bodies are being, you know, just trashed out like that because they're not used to feeling good. So they don't know the other side of the fence. They don't know when bad is bad because they haven't known when good is good.
Right.
And that's, again, the big thing for anybody who wants to go and be healthy and change over from the lifestyle of eating the fast foods, of eating the commercial foods. And heaven forbid, if you're eating any of the genetically modified foods or organisms, you don't know that you're being, that your body is being trashed out, that you're harming yourself in huge ways. Even things like fluoride in the water. They knew back in the 40s, 50s, 60s that you may not notice a difference right away, but as you age, when you get into your older years, all of a sudden it's going to smack you. It's one of the things we see with that too. It's, you know, bone structure that hardens and it becomes brittle, just like they're trying to do with the teeth. But the bones aren't supposed to be hard and brittle. They're supposed to be flexible enough that they don't break easy.
Mm-hmm. So it's not really working as the plan was supposed to go?
No.
Okay. Well, that's not good. Well, yeah. I know there's a lot of different things. I guess it's what people get used to as well. They're used to eating all the foods that have all the additives and everything in them, and it's hard to give that up for most people.
Well, it's hard mostly because you run into a situation where you're not getting choices for the most part. Most people go out, they go into a grocery store. The average grocery store you walk into, the majority of things in there are made out of grain. As I talked about earlier, one of the things that you're not going to find in the normal diet is grains, corn, wheat, and rice. It was not part of our diet as a hunter-gatherer. You would eat small quantities of it. The other thing that has happened is over the last 100 to 120 years is these things have been changed to a much more damaging type of food. And the exchange for that was a long shelf life. Well, you're going to probably have a long shelf life for your body too, but that shelf is not going to be where you get up in the morning and go someplace. It's going to be where, you know, the mausoleum shelf life. So this is another part of that is grains can actually be healthy for a person if they're prepared in the right way from grains that have not been altered from what they originally were.
Mm-hmm.
So the people out there who talk to me and come to my things and say, oh, I eat the diet-based Bible, or the Bible-based diet. And in there, they say, you said we shouldn't eat that. And I said, no, I said you shouldn't eat today's grains. You shouldn't eat the corn, wheat, and rice of today because it will harm you, cause you to gain weight, cause you to be diabetic from these things. And that's bad for you. The middle of the grocery store is mainly grains if you walk around there. Walk around the edge of the grocery store and get things there, but better yet, go to stores that have good organic foods in them. Go to places like the farm markets we have this time of year, and get locally grown products from people who don't use pesticides, fungicides, and herbicides, all of which are carcinogenic, on the foods. You know, get your food from there.
Get it fresh, in other words.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. This is WHFR.FM, station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Dr. William Carl. He's a wellness doctor and holistic chiropractor. And how did you get started being a wellness doctor? What prompted you to do that?
Well, I knew from the time I was a little, real little kid that I was going to do something to take care of people. I would go around scaring my relatives by carrying a little suitcase that had a microscope in it and a dissecting kit and some other testing equipment in there. And I was doing that instead of playing with the things kids normally play with. My relatives would, you know, tell my folks, don't let them bring that little brown box with them.
Yeah, it's because, trouble, huh?
Because I would, you know, take their cooking utensils and, like, boil the frog down in it and, you know, make a skeleton out of them and things like that. And they just didn't appreciate that.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, so you weren't one just to play catch or anything like that, right? Yeah. Something simple?
Well, I did those things, but I did more of the other. I enjoyed going out and trying to discover what this world is that I live in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was my greatest joy back then. As I went along, I was fortunate enough that when I was in grade school, I ended up teaching the science classes for the first and second and the seventh and eighth grade when I was in the eighth grade.
Hmm.
And in high school, I taught the chemistry class when I was supposed to be taking it, because I had already done all the things in my basement. My poor parents thought they had some strange disease from the sulfur they kept smelling coming up the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things that I think about today is if I lived in today's world, they would have probably tried to label me as ADHD or some such thing.
Right, and fill you up with drugs or something like that, mm-hmm. correct?
That is absolutely right. And mm-hmm. that's one of the things for parents to always think about is if your kids are active, don't be afraid of that. Encourage that, because these are the people that over time have gotten our world to be the modern, wonderful world it is the people that are innovative and they're thinkers and they're not afraid to go and do things that are different.
Mm-hmm. Rather than just give them drugs to sedate them, right? I mean, right. I think that's just more for the parents and the kids, because it's easier for them to control the children.
That's often the case, and unfortunately, too, there's parts of our society that have come into power that promote the idea that people should be drugged, and I think no one should be drugged. I think they should be first fed a good diet, because if you take away the artificial sugars and the food colorings and the other nonsense like that, the non-food foods, kids are not going to be as problematic as they are right now. But when I've talked to parents, some parents I've talked to about that say, oh no, that's being cruel to the kid. What's cruel to a kid is having a kid that no one wants to have around. That's sad and unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
So
if somebody comes to you and they have been taking drugs for a certain condition, do you tell them to keep doing that, or do you advise them not to do that, perhaps give them other remedies about certain situations?
Well, I have a very specific course of action with them, which is first off, I tell them, I didn't put you on the drugs. I'm not going to take you off the drugs. That's the job of the person who put you on the drugs. What I'm going to do is try to get your body in a condition where it no longer needs drugs. And then between you and your physician who decided that drugs were the answer, should decide that maybe drugs aren't the answer. But that's outside of the realm of what I do of taking people off the drugs. But if they look at it and see what is their quality of life with the way they're doing things, they can make a choice for themselves, because that's part of your freedoms that we're supposed to have, is to be able to choose how to live your life.
Mm-hmm. Do people usually come to you, perhaps they feel that they've exhausted all the different ways they can be treated by traditional medicine, and they come to you for alternative medicine and treatments?
Many of the people I see come in, and sometimes it gives me a little bit of a scare, so to speak, in a sense of they come to me and say, you are my very last hope. You're the last person. If you can't help me, that's it for me. I'm done.
Yeah, and not too much pressure there, huh?
And I think, darn, I guess I'm going to have to do some more miracles here.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it's one of the joys I have in my practice is that when I look back and I look, if I went into a standard medical practice, and this is never to down the medical profession because I have a great deal of respect for them, but in many of the people I see there, a successful day there is how many people didn't die that day. In my profession and what I do is how many people had a miracle that day? How many people had things happen in their life that they thought never, ever could happen, that they could have a life that they could only dream about? Mm-hmm. And it was just simply by doing the things that their body normally requires, the normal things that we should have as people. Mm-hmm. And doing that and giving them coaching on how to go and find that life. You know, and I take care of people from the time the day they're born to as many days as they want to live. And I am fortunate enough to see incredible things take place in my office. As I tell people, this is you, this is your body doing these things. This is the miracle there. I'm simply there to try to get rid of the interference and give you some coaching on what it is that you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
My fortunate circumstance has been that I've been able to spend time with many very, very intelligent, incredible people who have figured out so many of the things that I now can use in my practice over time, some of the pillars of the profession. I spent 6 years in my state organization as running the relicensure seminars, where every year you have to have so many hours of continuing education. I got to pick the people that would come in and speak to us, so I got to pick the people that were the most interesting people in the profession to come in, and I'd pick them up from the airport, sit down, eat with them, spend time with them, things that no one could ever do to have that kind of private time with people unless you were doing something like I did. It was the most amazing experience for me to do that.
Mm-hmm. Have you surprised a lot of people with your treatments?
I try not to surprise them. I try not to let them know what's going on ahead of time.
Oh, really?
But
well, yeah, you got to keep it quiet. But
I understand what you're saying when you say that. But with that, sometimes they're surprised in that the idea of eating right is huge for them. The idea of that their body is controlled and coordinated through their nervous system, that they don't realize that that's the case, that you have enough nervous tissue in your body that if you took it end to end, it would be enough to wrap around the earth at least once. People don't know what an incredible thing their body is that they have. Mm-hmm. And when you start showing them those things and then you start fixing the problems within the body, explaining to them that, say, a person who has a lot of problems with their teeth, they have problems with their teeth when they have problems with their organs. There's a flow pattern in the teeth that flows outward through the teeth from the root out in a healthy individual, and it keeps the teeth clean. If you become sick, the flow pattern reverses, and then you pull material into the tooth, and then you get bacteria lodged in it, you get things lodged in it that'll tend to cause decay. So people don't know those things. So when I put up their x-rays and I look at them, I can see how much silver they have lodged in their system, in their mouth. It gives me an idea of how their body has been over time, too. Mm-hmm. So that gives me some historic markers for them as well. Mm-hmm. So there's so many things you can look at. You can look at and see how much arthritic condition or change has gone on when we look at their pictures and see how long they have had a problem, see how their body is mineralized or not mineralized as far as their bone structure goes. Our body is an incredible balance of ratios. We know that there's hard numbers that people look at for what's going on, but it's the ratios within the body that is the most important thing. And that's the balance that we try to achieve for people. And when we do, they start seeing amazing changes.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you somehow or get in touch with you, how would they do so?
Okay, there's several good methods of doing that. We have two websites. That's one of the great ways to go on there. And we have lots of information on the websites. And that is carlwellnesscenter.com. And you can link on to our other website from there. You can also find us advertised in Body, Mind, Spirit Guide. I write articles in there every month on health conditions, and I see a lot of people that read those come in and say, hey, I didn't know I could get help with those things. What can we do? So that's a great magazine that's found all over. You can call us up at the office, which is the best, most direct route, and that number is 734-425-8220, and call us there. We're glad to help people. We're glad we offer people complimentary talk in the beginning, a consultation where you can come in, sit down, see if we're the right fit for you. One of the big things I always tell people when they're looking for doctors, go in, sit down, talk to them. First off, if they're not willing to talk to you and not charge you to talk to you, they're probably the wrong person. If they're willing to sit down and talk to you and find out whether or not you have things going on with you that they can help you with and tell you that, then that's a better opportunity. That's a better thing as far as they go and you go. Mm-hmm. So find somebody you're comfortable with, because if there's somebody you're not comfortable with, you're not going to go in, no matter how good they are. You're not going to go in and see them. And if you don't go see them, they can't help you. So
it must be very rewarding, though, the things that you do to help people. Don't you feel really good about the fact that you're able to help people as much as you do?
I love the fact that I do what I do. As I say, I started out a long time ago. I worked in the hospital setting. I left that. I went through electrical engineering school. I left that because I missed people, and then I went back to school again for, you know, the additional years needed to become a chiropractor, which was actually at that time 250 more classroom hours than it would take to become a general practitioner. And I met fabulous people in there that I learned from, and today to be able to do and take care of people like I do is, I love doing what I do. I love taking care of kids. They respond so quickly. I love going out and talking to groups of people. That's why I joined with the Foundation for Wellness Professionals, which is where we'll go out and talk to groups and talk on subjects of natural ways of taking care of health concerns. People know the medical route much of the time, and that sometimes is the right way for them, but there's also natural ways. The first most conservative thing you should always do is take the natural way and do that. And then you always have the option of going and doing something different if that's what's needed for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. It's been very interesting. We're going to have to come back. You're going to have to come back sometime because we haven't even touched all the different things that you have listed on your website. Things about food I wanted to get into, things like dandelions, you have that on your website. They're supposed to be good for you. I'll take your word for it. I don't know. But just things like that. I know you have the flower remedies, the Bach flower remedies, and like that.
Thank you. I would love to come back and talk more. As I say, one of the things I love to do as much as going and taking care of people is going and talking to people and letting people know what kind of things are out there that can benefit them. And what a wonderful world we live in that has all these things right here.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, I'm back, and I want to thank my special guest for this month, Dr. William Carl. Very interesting guest. I appreciate the fact he was able to do the show. I also want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay, for helping me out. I always appreciate that as well. Once again, thank you very much for listening to this show. We'll be back next month on the 15th of August. That's going to be the third anniversary of our show. Believe it or not, they said it wouldn't last, but once again, they were wrong, and what do they know? Anyway, I'm very proud of that. So, with that, I just want to say thank you for listening and have a great day.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. We're bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. Good morning. My name is Bill Keith. We're going to get things started with some music from Glenn Phillips from his album Mr. Lemons. This is a song called Thank You.
You made this world, you made this world, you made this world. Thank you.